Labor and Commerce come to order at 3:05. With us today, we're Representative Gardner, Representative Gatto, Representative Newman, and myself, Chair Olson. We have two or three more people that'll be trickling in. And the first item on the agenda is Senate Bill 230, and with us as a sponsor, please join us, Senator Ellis, and welcome to Labor and Commerce.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. It's a pleasure and an honor to be with you today. I'm going to be joined here today by my staffer, Max Hensley, who will help me with the presentation. For the record, I'm Johnny Ellis. I represent downtown and midtown Anchorage in the Alaska State Senate. And again, to you, Mr. Chairman, the committee staff, Ms. Wolf, and committee members, I really appreciate you holding this hearing today. Mr. Chairman, good afternoon. If I've heard it once, I've heard it a thousand times during my years in the Alaska legislature, that Alaskans need to pull together and help diversify the Alaskan economy and not just depend on one source of wealth. So when a rare opportunity comes along to incentivize a largely new economic activity, we have some economic activity now from this industry, but we can leverage much more to our benefit. I think we ought to seize that opportunity. And this legislation fits that bill. It's an important step to diversify the Alaskan economy. And I would note for the record that 45 states have active film offices, almost all with some kind of incentive program. 12 states offer transferable tax credits, and many others give direct grants from their treasury. Our plan proposed in this bill is built off the successes of other states. We've learned from other states and from our previous experience here in the state of Alaska. New Mexico, for example, had a $1.5 million dollars in film spending in 2001, the year that they enacted their tax incentive. And in 2007, the film industry there spent $476 million, a little less than half a billion. Louisiana went from $7 million in film spending in 2003 to $350 million in 2006. So these are states that you don't normally think of as great locations for a film industry. But with an active film office to answer the phones, to help coordinate the permits needed for this kind of activity, to smooth the way, and to give some incentives, some reasonable incentives, they've been able to rev up their local economies. Lots of jobs, lots of small business opportunities. Films that Alaska has lost, essentially, in just very recent years that may be of interest to the committee, we're 30 Days of Night. It's come out on DVD recently. It's not my cup of tea. It's a bunch of vampires murdering people in Barrow in grisly detail. That's not my idea of a fun day, but the kids seem to like it. Produced by Columbia Pictures, starring Josh Hartnett. Production budget of $32 million. Set in Barrow, filmed in New Zealand. The proposal, we've read about that just recently. In pre-production by Disney, starring Sandra Bullock. Set in Sitka. They hightailed it out of Sitka after a day and a half of exterior shooting and hightailed it to Massachusetts, where they were welcomed and incentivized for the expenditures of extraordinary sums of money in the local economy. But upcoming, Mr. Chairman, is the Yiddish Policeman Union. That's the Michael Chabon award-winning novel set in Sitka, Alaska. Very, very interesting story. I recommend this book to everybody. Optioned last week by the Coen brothers, who just won a bunch of awards. I would hope that could be filmed in Sitka, but we will see. We will see how that pans out. When I've looked at these different activities, Mr. Chairman, it's on the rare occasion, relatively rare occasion, when artistic preferences of the director went out. That's much too rare. When Sean Penn insists on filming in Alaska, where the End of the Wild story with that young man in the bus, that's become something of a weird tourist attraction, by the way. But when the artistic person has the authority to insist on filming in the authentic location, that happens. And local people are hired, local businesses, local hotels, local car rental companies, local hospitality, all of that is benefited. But in most cases, it comes down to the bottom line. It's a business like any other. And the bean counters and the folks, the producers, say we can make more money in Massachusetts, or we can make more money filming Alaska in Louisiana than we can in Alaska, so we're not going to go there and benefit Alaskans with our expenditures. That's enough of an introduction for me, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Hensley, if that's your pleasure. Just quickly go through the technical details of the main sections of the bill, and then be ready to answer questions. I know we have some very enthusiastic folks from the Alaska Film Group who have a terrific PowerPoint presentation, and we'd be happy to address any concerns or questions following that from members of the committee.
Before we get to Max, I'd like the record to reflect we've been joined by Representative Ledoux, Representative Book, and Representative Ramirez. We have a full committee, and Max, you're up. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Would you like us to ask questions as he gets to that part, or wait till the end and then ask?
I think we'll let Max go through it, then we'll.
Okay.
Hi, Senator.
For the record, my name is Max Hensley, staff to Senator Ellis. So just briefly, I'm going to walk through the latest version of the bill that was passed by the Senate last week. Section 1, on which begins line 5 of page 1 and runs through the top of page 2, authorizes the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development to cooperate with the Department of Revenue to provide a transferable, divisible tax credit that must be used within 3 years of issue. Section 2 is the bulk of the bill, runs from the top of page 2 to the bottom of page 6. That's broken up into seven major parts. The first part outlines the duties of the film office, the bulk of page 2. Creates the film office within the Department of Commerce and defines its duties as essentially cooperating with private industry to promote Alaska as a filming location, as well as certifying an internship program and administering the incentive program. They will also provide to the legislature an annual report on the number and size of credits that are applied for and that are actually dispersed, so that this legislature can maintain an eye on the activities of the film office. At the top of page 3, authorizes the film office to administer the incentive program. Throughout most of the rest of page 3, it outlines the minimum requirements for eligibility for productions for this film incentive program. A production has to spend at least $100,000 of qualified expenditures, which I'll get to in just a moment, over 24 months, and it must be approved by the film office. It specifically disallows news, weather, current events, internal corporate productions, local advertisements, infomercials, political advertisements, and obscene productions. The bottom of page 3 to the top of page 4 outlines the qualifications for the tax credit. A production must apply to the film office with a script or synopsis of their production, key names involved, estimated dates, and their spending estimates. If that's approved, the film office will issue a preliminary certificate, which will give an outline of the amount of credits that they can expect, which will help the industry plan for their production. The actual award of the film production tax credit is outlined from the top of page 4 through line 28 on page 4. It's a tax credit of 30% of qualified spending, with an additional 10% bonus on money spent on Alaska payroll and 2% bonuses for spending that takes place in rural areas or for spending that takes place between October and May. Prior to receiving any credit, the producer must submit to the film office a cost report that's been verified by an independent CPA. Finally, from the bottom of page 4 through to the top of page 6 is the determination of qualified expenditures. This is a long list, but the key line of the section is at the top of page 5, where it defines the spending as pre-production, production, or post-production spending that is directly incurred in this state, that is directly on things that are directly used in the production. Things that will never be qualified include the costs of the CPA verification that I mentioned earlier, costs for marketing or distribution of the film, expenditures that are later reimbursed, profit-sharing costs, or the wages of high earners. Then the latter two sections in Section 2 outline the ability of the film office to promulgate regulations and some definitions. Finally, Sections 3 through 5, from the bottom of page 6 through the top of page 7, they combine to put a 5-year sunset on the provisions that apply to the film incentive program, not on the film office, but just the incentive program. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
I will just start around the room. Representative Gatto, followed by Representative Ledoux and Representative Ramirez.
Max, I'm going to back up just a little bit. You had exceptions and exclusions, weather, sports, advertising, et cetera. Did that list include pornography?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, yes, it does. The final list on that section is any film, is any production that is determined by the film office. I'm reading here from page 3, lines 21 and 22, to contain sexually explicit conduct as defined in 18 U.S. Code 2256, which is the federal definition for pornography. It's used in a number of different states, and this was the, it's a national standard. I'd be happy to provide the language of that code for you if you'd like.
I got it. Thank you.
Representative Ledoux.
I'm trying to figure out what taxes a film company that is not based in Alaska but merely shoots in Alaska, what income taxes they'd be paying that we'd be offsetting by the credit.
Well, typically, through the chair, to Representative Ledoux, all of these companies set up limited liability corporations. It's the standard business practice. That's what everyone does who comes, who's not an Alaska-based corporation who comes here to do business. And there was a suggestion in the Senate by several folks of, well, why don't we tax limited liability corporations to capture this money to the state treasury? And of course, that's a huge policy call. It would have overarching ramifications for any kind of future economic activity in the state of Alaska. So I personally think taxing limited liability corporations would be a huge mistake. But if people want to have a larger discussion about that, it probably could be started with this legislation, but would probably go much beyond that. So the taxes that would be paid, the benefit would accrue to the local parts of the state, local areas. If a local government chooses to have a sales tax or other bed taxes, other alcohol taxes, those would be recaptured at the local level. But the state of Alaska chooses not to have a state income tax or a state sales tax, so there can be no recouping. Somebody in the other body suggested, well, how can the state treasury recoup these things? The state treasury can only recoup for the state treasury from this economic activity by instituting taxes that the legislature for three decades has rejected.
I'm getting really confused. I'm okay. Sorry.
That's okay.
So in other words, we're going to give the film companies a credit to use to pay against any local taxes?
We'll explain the mechanism, the transfer of the tax credit mechanism.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I'll back up a little bit. I guess I went a little too fast through that section there. My apologies. But the credit that we're that this bill would offer is a transferable tax credit.
Which is the most commonly used mechanism for among the states that incentivize this industry.
And what that would be applicable to is any business or any taxpayer within the state that has a corporate income tax liability, and that's a number of different industries all that are based here. So these tax credits would be issued to the film companies based on their spending, but they, unless they were, for the most part, they would not be able to use them themselves. They would have to sell them through a broker or personally to a company that holds a corporate income tax liability.
I think I've got you. So in other words, they can sell them to the oil companies.
Through the chair, or to the telecommunications companies, or to the grocery stores, or to the tourism companies, or
there's any about other. $800 million. There's less than $1 billion of corporate income tax paid to the state of Alaska, to the state treasury, by a variety of corporations. It's our understanding that the two of the three major oil companies in the state don't operate or don't participate in transferable tax credits. So if a concern, I'm not ascribing this concern to you, but if a concern were some general discomfort with oil companies in the state of Alaska, at least two of the three do not participate in that kind of activity.
No, that wasn't my, I was just trying to figure out, you know, since they wouldn't be paying taxes, exactly how we're going to give them a tax credit, but you've explained that to me, so I appreciate that. Thank you.
Representative Rammers?
Thank you. Hello, Senator. Oh, thank you very
good
much.
Good afternoon.
My friend Bill Slate, plumber out of North Pole, been in Alaska for 50 years, 110 plumbers. He's a C Corp, and he does pay taxes in the state of Alaska, and he's not in the oil industry. He employs 110 plumbers across the state throughout rural Alaska, out on our military installations. And Osborne and Watterson Construction that he works for, they also are C Corps in the state of Alaska.
So they could benefit.
They, yeah. Correct. So I have a couple of questions for you. One is a follow-up on Representative Ledoux's question, which is how would Sladen Plumbing and Heating, a C Corporation, how would they find that tax credit? Where is the facility where they would go to find that? I'm just unfamiliar with that mechanism. If you could take me through that, and then I have a second question, Mr. Chairman.
Well, we're creating the mechanism, and you want to talk about brokers?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Ramirez, in all of the other states that have instituted programs like this, brokers have come into the state that act as a marketplace. Somebody's business it is to buy those credits from the out-of-state film companies and then market them and find the corporations within the state who would be interested in purchasing them.
And a follow-up on that point. So that happens in the private sector, and presumably the brokers get a commission on that, the buyers of the credit get a commission on that, and then we benefit from these production companies that export the majesty of Alaska, generally speaking. Is that kind of the
correct
gist of it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then the second question, and a matter in which I hope to introduce an amendment at the appropriate time, Mr. Chairman. I had the opportunity and declined to meet Sean Penn, who's I philosophically don't align very well with, but he's a high dollar guy. If he were the talent, he would be $10 million guy. What would be the mechanism if it's a 90-day shoot? To round it out, let's say it's 100 days to shoot the film. How do you allocate the payroll? For the stars, the Coen brothers, No Country for Old Men, best picture of the year. So the Sitka Police Union, or the name of that book, could presumably attract, Angelina Jolie or like Senator, you referenced Sandra Bullock. I mean, that's a $10 or $20 million talent. How is that fee allocated over the shooting period? Is that something that the agency would set up, or the?
Well, there's the limitation in the bill on high-paid talent, and I know that's different people have different opinions whether that's an appropriate limitation in the legislation. That's what the other body felt comfortable with, but so there's a limitation on the high-dollar talent. How the rest of the payroll that qualifies for the tax credit?
Yes, or if I were to introduce an amendment that would remove that limitation that your body put into this bill, what is the allocation of the payroll? Let's say it's a $5 million. The star is going to get $5 million for a picture. The picture is going to take 100 days to shoot. They're in Alaska for 20 days. Is it going to be on an allocated amount of days of production in Alaska basis? Is that?
No, I believe, the limitation adopted in Senate Finance was just a dollar figure, a cap. It was capitation of the payments, high dollar payments to the primary stars. People weren't comfortable with, giving tax credits for the high salaries of certain Hollywood stars. But for the rest, go ahead, Max.
On page 5, the definition of qualified expenditures, this is item 10. If that section that you're referencing were to be removed, I believe it would fall underneath the total aggregate payroll for services performed in Alaska. And so there would be a determination.
It would just be the star's salary subsumed into the overall payroll.
So, Mr. Chairman, first of all, I'm a big fan of this bill, so I'm just kind of asking some questions, but We've all seen Tom Wright, who's working for Representative Chenault, you know, he's a nut for the deadliest catch, and he's done that, you know, he watches it over and over, and it was a huge show for Alaska until the little scandal, the mini scandal that broke out about the wrong kind of crab or baby crabs or something. Then there's this fellow, Geo Beach, out of Homer, I think, out of Representative Seaton's district. A little bit of a prima donna, I've heard, but nevertheless, a pretty great program, and they waited here for an intentional explosion on the avalanche last year when with the heavy snowfall that didn't happen, and they've been up into the interior. If you amalgamate the production costs for a particular episode, or let's say it's a $50 million movie, I think Into the Wild was a $30 million movie, I think, to produce, so pretty small budgeted film. How would you allocate, how much of the expenses would be the Alaskan portion of the shoot? And then what sort of a formula, again, to follow on Representative Ledoux, because I wasn't crystal clear, how, let's say of the $30 million that $5 million was spent in the state of Alaska, what portion of that would be subject to a tax credit? If, could you just take us through a hypothetical of $30 million film, $5 million of it were Alaska, direct Alaska production costs, and then what sort of a credit you would generate off of that, and then what the broker might do and what the buyer might get and how much it would incur against the state treasury, just so we could kind of follow the economics. Is that a...
No, that's a very reasonable request, Mr. Chairman, to Representative Ramirez. If you wouldn't mind, we'd like to get our thought together on that, so when we go through it the first time, it's crystal clear.
Okay.
So if we could hold that, and we'll get back to it.
Okay.
Representative Newman, followed by Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a few questions now. Senator Ellis, and I talked to your staff about this, and quite frankly, the first thing that jumped out in my mind was the cost to the state on this, and some of the things that we talked about is, you know, when we have OCS doesn't have enough people, and all, I'm concerned about the cost to the state, and I know I'm not on the Finance Committee, but this is something that I think that would, it's still our job to look at some of this stuff, so some of the questions kind of go to that. It's just because of my concern on the cost, and we've got programs in the state that are pretty good programs, and we can't find homes for foster kids, but we can find tax credits for film companies from outside of Alaska.
Mm-hmm. And so, Mr. Chairman, to Representative Newman, I'm totally with you on that, and if you want to work with me, I'm happy to work with you to try and succeed on that for once. I'm with you all the way.
Well, thank you. So I think my first suggestion would go from 30% to about 5%, so I don't know if you're with me on that one. But let's start from the top. When we're talking about, it says the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, in Section 1, they're going to provide the transferable tax credit. Now, they're going to have a director, I believe, within that department's going to have to be chosen and hired, then that director will be selected by a list of five names that the Office of Film, whatever we call them.
Well, those names would be considered.
Would go in there, would be considered. So where does revenue play in on this and making sure that we have a good accountability of how the state's funds are? Because I think we're going to, in my mind, and maybe it goes a little bit on where Representative Ramirez was going on there, is following the dime on where we're going on this and which office is accountable for, because it seems like we're crossing some lines here. So if you could talk to that a little bit, I'll just rephrase that. What is the union between the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, and Revenue? Where does that end and start?
Through the chair to Representative Newman, the bill, different parts of the bill relate to different one or the other departments. So if your concern is about the interplay between the two departments, if I understand you correctly?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Max, you want to try?
Sure. Very broadly, The Department of, the Film Office would be located within the Department of Commerce, through the chair, Representative Newman. And they would be issuing, they would be evaluating and administering the incentive program. The credits, once they were issued, would then be redeemed through the Department of Revenue. However, it does say that the they are to be in cooperation with each other, and I would expect that within the administration there would be conversation and communication about what one hand is doing to the other hand.
If I may just continue, Mr. Chair. So then if there was an internal audit, the legislature said, okay, we want to take a look at this, we want to audit this, who does it, DCCED or Revenue?
Well, the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee could perform the audit, and in 5 years we're going to review the whole incentive program. So either agency could audit their internal functions, and LBNA could audit the whole thing, or both.
As well, DCCED, the Film Office, will be providing under this bill an annual report to the legislature of the credits.
Right. I guess just the longer that I'm in office, and this is my fourth year is all, but I've come to notice that a lot of state departments look at their budget, and they don't want to look at anybody else's budget. They don't, you know, they keep pretty much within their own realm, and they're, and when it comes to trying to, and I've been trying to encourage them to work amongst themselves a little bit better. So I was just wondering if you've got a better plan on how we can assure that these departments work together on this, and again, how that makeup is going to be done, and maybe when we get the answer to Representative Ramos's question, that will become more clear.
Okay.
Also, when we go into the Film Office, and it talks about on page 14, it says created a Film Office in the Department of DCCED, and that Film Office shall promote Alaska as an appropriate location for film production. So is it your intent that how would that work? How do you see that happening?
Promoting, through the chair to Representative Newman, to promote Alaska as a location? I guess we could take guidance from the previous iteration of the Film Office before budget cuts pretty much ended that activity for the most part. It's a quarter-time assignment to a particular person in the department, and that's wholly inadequate. Most people would agree. So it's everything from emails to answering the phone to talking to various people that call in with questions about filming in Alaska. You know, you could envision some collateral materials that would be developed, many of which already exist and could be updated. So it's general promotion activity that almost every state now does, and we don't really do anymore. So we'd be getting back in the game of having some materials available for people interested in spending their money here.
So you'd like to see a position set up, or would the director who works within DCCED, would this fall under his duties then, as the director's job is to call MGM or whatever, I don't know who makes movies, you probably know that, and try and say, hey, come to Alaska and make your movies, or they're going to be, if somebody inquires within the state about locations, then it's...
Through the chair to Representative Newman, I'd be happy if somebody were able to answer the phone in a timely manner and send out the materials and help coordinate. And the quarter-time person does the best she can with no resources, essentially. So I think that would be a big step forward. But we're also envisioning a modest effort to reach out to folks. You know, there's always talk in the industry, and there are folks in Alaska who make their living scouting locations and talking up different scripts, and a lot of people, you know, writing scripts who would like to film those, see those productions produced and filmed here in the state of Alaska. So there would be opportunities for people to reach out to the major studios and not so much the casting directors, but the location folks. and cinematographers and those sorts of things. So there would be some level of outreach to secure, because this is a competition. We are in a national, if not global, competition for these dollars. And I would just hasten to say, Mr. Chairman, that before anyone gets too concerned about subsidizing some economic activity, the state of Alaska, one way or another, subsidizes almost all major industry economic activity in the state of Alaska, some more than others, some more productively than others. Whether it's healthy or not, it's a time-honored tradition in the state of Alaska for there to be some sort of state government partnership with private industry to maximize the benefit to Alaskans. So we're not crossing any barriers or any taboos with that in this legislation. But specifically to Representative Newman, we do anticipate responding to the requests that come here to Alaska, sometimes unanswered or unanswered in a timely fashion, in spite of the good efforts of that quarter-time person. And I hope she will continue to play a role in this because she has some experience over the years, sort of the famine years in this effort, and that there would be a modest outreach effort to try and compete for some of those dollars.
And
so it's both ways.
I understand, Senator Ellison. In fact, you know, when I look at what we've already got happening in the state of Alaska, we have a dairy industry that's pretty close to falling flat on its face that has a $25 million a year impact per year, $25 million, and we could get absolutely zero assistance from the state on that one to try and help that one out. But I know that there's a lot of, we have wood chips, you know, wood industry in the state. And I'd like to see, you know, a lot of more expansion on stuff that we've already got here. Mm-hmm. It seems very, very difficult to try and get that. But next question would be, so we'll be having a new director. What about commercials? When I'm looking into the eligibility here, and if we have Representative Ramos, you know, or maybe Representative Gatto owns a hotel chain or a motel and produces commercials for his hotel, could they work through this film director's office and get any credits on that if they used Alaska labor and it was all filmed in Alaska and used an Alaska production company?
Mr. Chairman, we have a resource person available who is an expert in answering these kinds of questions if you would like, or we can take a stab at it as well.
I can, through the chair, Representative Newman, on the
commercials.
On the commercials, the eligibility section on page 3, lines 18 and 19, disallows any advertisement, infomercial, or any production that solicits funds except for a commercial television advertisement for national distribution. So I guess I have to admit that I'm not familiar with Representative Gatto's motels, but unless
so if Representative Gatto
nationwide.
So if Representative Gatto.
I don't own any.
It was a hypothetical.
So okay. If Representative Gatto was to advertise in Seattle, now he would be eligible for this credit?
Through the chair, I do not believe that would be eligible. It would have to be for nationwide distribution.
That would be national distribution, wouldn't it?
I don't think so.
I through the chair, I do not believe so.
We'll get a definitive answer for you.
And to your previous question about the role of the film office in promoting the state, Carol McConkie from the Department of Commerce is here and could testify to that if the chair would like that.
Yeah, we'll get to her after the PowerPoint, but Representative Gatto, followed by Gardner Book and Liddell.
One more question.
Are you sure?
At least a couple here, Mr. Chair, if you don't mind. On page 5, line 17, it says qualified expenditures. It says other similar production expenditures is determined by the film office, and we've already got 16 listed expenditures. That seems to leave it pretty wide open on that end. Was that your intent?
Through the chair, it was purposeful. We're trying not to miss any opportunities or any benefit to the state.
Yay.
Through the chair, 5 years ago, there was no digital film editing. And if this were,
we expect
we don't know what will happen in 5 years.
We expect technology and the industry to progress, and we want to be able to capture those benefits for Alaskans.
I fell in your film.
We are being aggressive but reasonable is my calculation here. But we definitely want to refine this to make it the best product possible. I appreciate the
Mr. Chair, we'll let somebody else ask some questions, and I'll continue with it.
Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Can you remember your question?
Yes. I had to write it down, though. We're going to allow 30% credit plus 10% for Alaska wages plus 2% for native or rural hire plus 2% for season. So what we wound up was 30 plus 10 plus 2 plus 2, or 44. Question one, is that competitive or generous or right on?
That's an excellent question, Mr. Chairman. It's right at my tolerance level, actually, and it is competitive. And we'll listen to the private sector folks who've come up, and they can disagree or disagree with me, but that's about what, you know, I came into this thinking 20, 25, wouldn't that be enough? That seems like a lot of money or potential. I mean, this is all prospective, right? But we listened to folks all around the country and the experts in the industry and folks who didn't have a dog in this fight or weren't going to make a buck off of us, who said, this is what you've got to do to be in the game. And, you know, we only expend these transferable tax credits if we are bringing, if the economic activity and benefit actually occurs. So this is it's not overly generous. It's not, you know, when I was down in the 20, 25% range, it wasn't going to get us what we wanted to achieve. And so I modified my thinking based on the private sector folks who didn't, not the promoters and the people that are going to make a buck, but the objective industry analysts that I think you can take as objective consultants on this point. But that's the point. You want to get to that sweet spot where you're getting the economic benefit, you're not giving too much away. That's exactly where we're trying to go.
And if I may, Mr. Chair, I would agree with you that we need to start high. Mm-hmm. When we have five fill companies tripping over each other and fighting with each other, we can start lopping off percents.
We can pull back.
But
and that's the plan, Mr. Chairman, is to review this for effectiveness.
And now the second and final question scenario. We have a film company that comes up here, does the films, pays the costs up here, leaves, produces the film, and makes a fortune, $100 million. Do we then come back and say, you know, 10% of that is a result of your having been in Alaska, so we have a corporate income tax on 10% of your $100 million in profit, and so we're going to tax you based on a $10 million profit that you made in Alaska? How is that? I mean, is that a scenario, or is that prohibited, or because it's certainly what we're hoping for is that they'll make money hand over fist, and that's why we're giving them the incentives. But then, do we essentially reap some of our credits by having the corporate income tax?
Through the chair to Representative Gatto, I appreciate the scenario. We did not contemplate in this bill. Well, first of all, success and profit are good and to be encouraged and to be celebrated. So we're hoping that folks do well and that success breeds success for future kinds of activities. You know, think about the, I know this is a little off your topic, but think about the promotion. You know, we've talked about and really bemoaned together some of the bad publicity and the bad image of Alaska. And so this kind of activity of featuring our natural beauty and the animals and the people of Alaska is a great big commercial, I think, to the national and worldwide audience for our tourism, for our economic opportunities, for all the great things, all the reasons we live here and stay here. So that's a less tangible but very real benefit to this legislation potentially in the future. So we hope people come here and do very, very well. This bill does not at this time contemplate a windfall profits tax on or a piece of the profit sharing with the industry. I don't know that anybody else does that because people would say if that's at risk, you know, everybody's hoping for a blockbuster. But if we have to give a portion of that to the state in which we film, they will film Alaska in Louisiana. They will film Sitka in Massachusetts. So, you know, we could talk about that, and I'm very interested in what the private sector folks would say, the pros and cons of that. My mind is not closed to that, but I have a feeling that, well, it never came up in the other body to think of a windfall profit tax or a profit sharing with the studios, because that probably would not be well received if I took a wild guess. It's not illegitimate to think about it and to consider it, but it might be the tipping point that wouldn't accrue to our benefit.
And finally, not a question but a comment, world's deadliest catch. Really, I think, encouraged a lot of people to think Alaska, but they're not going out on a fishing boat.
Right.
If we had another film that said world's toughest job and it showed a derrick punching the ground looking for oil, I mean, that's another way that you'd essentially say, look what a great job is being done. And that's the advertisements. We're trying to get people to look at the state to say they do it well. My gosh, look at look at the high risks they take, and look at what the oil pipe, et cetera. That was my comment. That's why I'm very encouraged.
No, I appreciate
by the bill.
Thank you, Representative Gatto. Through the chair, the deadliest catch is an example of something that's already taking place. But I'll let Mr. Hensley talk about some of the feedback that we've received about the continuation of that series, the expenditure of funds here, and how this bill might help with existing production activity in the state.
There, through the chair, in your packet, you'll see a news article from the Alaska Journal of Commerce that credits that television show with a 17% increase in the cost of Alaska King Crab over the last year. Because of heavily increased demand, there's a national restaurant chain that has put King Crab from the name of the boat, and I'm sorry, I've forgotten the name of the boat, on their menu. So that's one of the secondary
The Copper River Red phenomena is now occurring to the King Crab because of the deadliest catch.
But just because a program is here once does not ensure that it returns. You know, the production companies make decisions on these TV shows every season. They can choose whether to have more episodes per season. They can choose whether to have more seasons. They can choose whether to have a spinoff. I've heard people talk about a deadliest catch southeast, a deadliest things of that in order. So
deadliest job.
Right. Representative Gardner, followed by Book and Ledoux, and then we're going to go into the PowerPoint. So, Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually had several questions, but they've mostly been answered already. One remaining question is about page 4, line 17, where it says an additional 2% of qualified expenditures made between October 1 and March 30th. And I'm wondering, you know, the rationale for that, because it seems like there are some types of filming that could only be done in the wintertime, or people are looking for winter scenes, and would we really need to give an additional credit when we're so well positioned, or at least we used to be, to offer winter climate stuff?
Well, through the chair to Representative Gardner, we're of course, as you would imagine, trying to give an incentive for filming during a period of the year when many of our communities go into economic hibernation, and cash jobs and economic activity are rare, few and far between. So that's what we're trying to give an incentive to. But it would be for, you know, a lot of those winter scenes can be shot in British Columbia, and that's where they shoot many of them. I mean, it was rare to have White Fang filmed in Haines. Most of that goes to British Columbia in the wintertime. And so it's just one more little sweetener there to try and get that activity here.
Thank you. There's one more question. On page 3, on line 3, talking about the incentive, and is subject to appropriations for the purpose. So I'm interested in knowing about sort of the timing of how that would work. When would the appropriation be made?
Yes. Through the chair, Representative Gardner, the appropriations that refers to would be the operating money to the Department of Commerce to administer the program, which you'll see in the fiscal note that's attached. So if this bill is passed, there would need to be, there's an operating fiscal note of approximately $300,000 attached.
Thank you.
Representative Book.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To address a question that was posed earlier on page 2, starting at line 10, talks about duties, and on line, I believe line 20, it talks about in cooperation with the Department of Revenue. I know that through Department of Labor and DECC. They are DEEC, whatever it is, Department of Commerce and Community. There are letters of reciprocation. So there already exists vehicles by which we do exactly what they talk about in this bill already. So to be able to manifest what we have in place and incorporate that in the bill, I believe we do have vehicles in place whereby a letter of reciprocation or some other conveyance would be able to actually administer to your question.
Thank you.
Representative?
Yeah, the two departments, through the chair, the two departments have a history of working together. And so if there's more specificity needed for that, we're going to be happy to answer Representative Newman.
Representative Ledoux.
Yeah, just a couple of questions here. Why would you want to, for example, eliminate from this a production used primarily for industrial, corporate, or institutional purposes? I mean, I'm seeing some of these limitations and an advertisement infomercial. I mean, why are you excluding those things? If they bring people to the state and hire people, why do we want to exclude them?
What?
Through the chair, yes. There's, to open that up a little bit more broadly, there's some of these productions that were excluded because you can't film a news or weather show about Alaska without coming to Alaska. There's no reason to incentivize them.
Gotcha.
But for these other ones, an internal use or industrial production, those are not paid for by the production companies generally. They're paid for by the sponsors. So to give the production company an incentive doesn't incentivize the production. It's the same with...
I don't understand what...
Those productions that are infomercials, for example, the producer of an infomercial does not pay any of the costs of making that. The, you know, extra sharp knife or the whatever it is that is advertised on late night TV is the company that pays for those. So to give the producers an incentive wouldn't change the calculations as to whether or not they would film it here or elsewhere.
That was part of me learning about how this industry works in different facets, but we would not be
that's the name of it.
Well, why wouldn't follow up? Why wouldn't you want to give anybody who came here, whether you called it a production company or it's simply the company that pays for it, if you can get them to Alaska? Why would you want to make that distinction?
Well, that's the best answer that we have, but there may be some industry folks who can help explain some of the nuances of financing and how those things work. If we come to a better conclusion, I'm not saying just, you know, absolutely open to your ideas of how to refine this, but the industry people, the private sector folks, made a compelling argument to us in committee and the other body, and this is the list we came up with, but it could be tweaked.
Can I have a couple more follow-ups? When we go to commercial television advertisement produced for national distribution, wouldn't a commercial be paid for by the folks who are advertising rather than the production company? That would be the first thing. And then in the same vein would be, so suppose it wasn't for national distribution. Suppose it was just for the Southwest United States. Why would you want to make those distinctions?
Through the chair, Representative Dewey, we had an interest in limiting the number of small applications to help out the film office in their administrative role. That's why there's the minimum spend of $100,000. That's why there's the exclusion of some local and commercials. We wanted to make sure that the film office wasn't involving itself in a number of extended, you know, for lack of a better term, you know, this is a film of my Alaskan vacation. And so in order to do that, we set certain minimums that we felt would be worthwhile things to incentivize that would have an impact on the country in terms of the secondary impacts that we've been talking about, tourism and positive exposure for the state.
Thank you for reminding me of that. Yeah, otherwise, the film office, we're not proposing a large enough film office with a large enough staff with the time to handle just massive numbers or significant numbers of application. That's why the minimum dollar level is there, some exclusions. We're trying to target this to the most productive, profitable kinds of enterprises and not deal with lots and lots of work that doesn't produce much economic benefit. So choices had to be made.
To follow up on that, you'll see in the presentation later an explanation of the various costs of different types of productions, which was very informative to me to learn the absolute range of costs. And I think that we've, in this, tried to target the high dollar, high value productions.
And Mr. Chairman, if we got to we'll go with whatever you want to do, obviously, but the PowerPoint and some of the private sector folks can answer.
We're going to do the PowerPoint right now.
Some of these things better than the politicians.
Can I get just one more follow-up?
One short one.
Okay.
That's 6 minutes.
5, a production that is determined by the film office that contains sexually explicit conduct. I mean, in this day and age, I mean, where they have Viagra commercials and Flomax on regular television, I mean, I think you find sexually explicit conduct even in our productions now, not just XXX productions, but just regular, ordinary, run-of-the-mill productions, don't you?
We've used the national standard. We're using the reference to the federal statute, the national standard. It's what every other state with a film office or film incentive uses. So, of course, they're very objective. It's a very subjective kind of thing in terms of personal likes and dislikes, but we're using the federal standard to not incentivize pornographic productions in the state of Alaska. But different people have different concerns about. Some people are concerned about PG productions and call them pornographic. That's a subjective personal decision, but we're sticking with the federal standard because that's all we have to make the legal constitutional distinction.
And I'd be happy to provide that standard for you. It's a fairly explicit definition. If you don't mind,
that's a
poor sense. So.
We retract that statement.
You know that.
But I'll be happy to come back, and I really appreciate all the interest in the bill.
Mr. Chairman, gavel to gavel is pretty dramatic. We could blitz it up. We could export it, reality television.
I'm not sure of the ratings. Mr. Chairman, is it all right for these folks to come forward?
Certainly.
Okay.
So where do we click?
No, we're going to watch the PowerPoint.
Yes.
Eddie's, please.
Committee members, thanks for allowing us to come and give you this presentation. Great questions. My name is Bob Crockett. I am a past president and current board member of the Alaska Film Group.
And my name is Kate Tessar, and I'm the pro bono lobbyist for the Alaska Film Group and filling in for someone who couldn't be here today. As we get started in this, though, I did want to reference one piece of in your material in your packets regarding a selection of the number of letters of support and emails and messages of support that have come from across the strait on this bill so far, so people can peruse that when they have time.
Okay, we represent the Alaska Film Group, and we're here to talk about SB 230 and what it can do for the state of Alaska. AFG was formed in, the Alaska Film Group was formed. The Alaska Film Group was formed in 1992 as a nonprofit trade association with a diverse membership base. We're a voice for the film and video industry of Alaska, and we're advocates to create economic opportunities and jobs for our members in Alaska businesses. Alaska's goals, our goals, and the state's goals are the same. progress, productivity, putting Alaskans to work. I'd like to present our next gold rush. Most people don't realize how broad an economic impact any given production can bring to the state.
We apologize to you. We haven't given this before, and we're just kind of filling in for someone.
Okay, for some reason this won't. There we go.
Okay.
Most people don't realize how broad an economic impact any given production can bring to the state. This is a multi-billion dollar global industry.
Senate Bill 230 will create diversification of our economy, new private sector jobs, opportunities for new training programs, jobs for interns, crew, and Alaskans, infusion of construction dollars, millions of dollars worth of good PR, opportunities in rural Alaska, and tax credits for corporations operating in Alaska. SB 230 uses similar components of other successful incentive programs from states like Louisiana and New Mexico. We've done a lot of research on this, gone through the other 45 states and pulled out the components that were actually working. What we're trying to do, this legislation will take qualified ground spend from production companies shooting in Alaska, and it creates transferable tax credits for corporate Alaskan taxpayers. And this is not unlike the regulations and statutes that are in place for the old PPT. And you might wonder who will benefit from the passage of SB 230. And this is just a short list of the people: wage earners, people with air service, catering companies, hotels, retailers, freight companies, rental companies, security companies, and tourism companies. It's a very short list of the people and businesses and that the film companies use in any given area, and this is who they hire and where they spend their money locally. Alaska is missing out right now. We just aren't competitive in this multi-billion dollar global industry. And we're one of, as Senator Ellis said, only a few states in the U.S. without an incentive program. There are 45 states, and recently a 46th state joined with their own incentives. The first thing a production company asks about is incentives when they are looking at a state. And if you don't have them, they walk away. The film industry can impact all communities across Alaska, and many will leave infrastructure behind, such as sound studios, sound stages, and movie sets for future productions. And as the senator mentioned, for example, White Fang in Haines is still a tourist attraction 10 years after the production has gone away.
The tax credit incentives and how it works. The production company applies for a credit. The film office approves production, issues a preliminary certificate with estimated credit amount, and the movie gets made. The production company submits a spending report verified by the Department of Commerce and an independent CPA. The film office and the Department of Revenue issues a transferable tax credit. The producer sells the credit to an Alaska corporate taxpayer, generally through a broker. And the taxpayer redeems the transferable credit to offset tax liability within a three-year time frame. Let's take a look at some of the economic impacts. Remember Northern Exposure, it put Roslyn, Washington on the map. Early network promos for the series showed a sign that read, Sicily, Alaska, population 839. The number was an inside joke. It referred to the $839,000 allotted each episode, and it was a low-budget series. In spite of their low budget, it cost over $92 million to produce in its four-year run. At an estimated ground spend of 75%, that puts over $69 million into Washington's economy.
Canada has been our biggest competitor. From 2001 to 2005, 142 features were produced in Canada. They built an infrastructure around the film industry and are so booked with productions they don't have enough crew to meet the demand. And Canada now is looking at increasing their tax incentives to try and fight what is happening in the United States right now with so many states trying to get movie production in the United States. Some of this information Senator Ellis gave you, but who are we competing with nationally? The Guardian, which of course was set in Kodiak, Alaska, spent only 1 week shooting there, and the rest of it was shot in Louisiana and South Carolina. And the reason why is because Louisiana had created a very successful incentive program. In just 2 years, film jobs went from about 5,000 to an additional 13,400 jobs. Production dollars spent in Louisiana went from $7 million in annual ground spend to over $340 million. In 2007, Louisiana had three TV series and 34 features filming in that area. Since 2001, Louisiana and New Mexico have experienced a compound annual employment growth of 23% a year in the film industry alone. Sorry, Max.
Sorry, Max. Okay. There we go. What's our current market share of this multi-billion-dollar global industry? We're seeing some reasonable exposure to the state with a reality-based show, Deadliest Catch, as we talked about. This is a non-scripted TV series currently in their third successful season. They have a crew of about 30, but only two are Alaskans. Their per-season ground spend is $3.7 million. We missed out on the series Men in Trees. This episodic TV series has a ground spend of $20 million per season and is currently shot in Vancouver, B.C.
And you might want to mention, Bob, about the series that is coming up that Representative Gatto had talked about that in conjunction with The Deadliest Catch.
Oh, there's another project called America's Toughest Jobs.
Just as you had said.
That is coming up here. So
GOP.
No, it is coming in. It's an NBC-sponsored series, and it'll be coming up. Features have the highest ground spend, about 75% of a film's total budget. A recent feature we lost was mentioned before by Senator Ellis, 30 Days of Night, set in Barrow, but shot thousands of miles away in New Zealand with an estimated ground spend of $37.5 million. These are projects SB 230 will target. We were vying to be the location for an upcoming Disney film starring Sandra Bullock set in Sitka, Alaska. But where is it being shot today?
It says, Senator Ellis said, welcome to Sitka, Massachusetts. The producers would have loved to shoot in Alaska, but we didn't have incentives, rebates, or tax credits. And Massachusetts has all three of these, plus the coastline to make it look like Alaska. But it's not the first time. Alaska has long been a popular setting for films and television. Just look at our track record of the ones that got away. Max? And you just take a look at this over the years, you can see these are films that were about Alaska. They're set in Alaska, and then this next slide will show you those were the ones that were actually made in Alaska.
As you can see at the top of this chart, are feature films producing a greater economic impact to Alaska. On average, this is what film projects spend per shoot day in any given location. These are high-paying jobs. They compare to the North Slope. Feature films pay high union rates. Commercials pay even higher.
Incentives attract films, which in turn affect markets, which help build local infrastructure that employ Alaskan labor force, and that in turn increases the projects that are coming into the state. So it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. We have the mystique in Alaska, we have the backdrops that people want, and we have the basic crew. What we don't have is the incentive program to bring them here. We're getting calls from film producers wanting to bring their productions to Alaska. I know that Senator Ellis's office is even getting phone calls from people who have been reading about this incentive. When's it going to happen? There are scripts already written which are ready to come to Alaska and waiting.
I think you get the point about the passage of SB 230. Creates jobs, diversifies the economy, stimulates tourism, builds infrastructure and support services, offers opportunities for rural Alaska, promotes educational internship programs, and provides transferable tax credits for Alaska corporations.
And as Senator Ellis said, and as Governor Palin has said, as Alaskans, we all have the same goals in mind for our state: progress, productivity, and putting Alaskans to work. This legislation will do exactly that, and thank you for support for SB 230, and we would be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Representative Waddell.
I've got a question and a comment. First of all, I support this bill, but you mentioned the movie The Guardian as a movie that ended up in Louisiana because we didn't have the necessary tax credits. And I kind of think that might be overstating things a little bit. They started out in Kodiak, but they managed to get weathered out. Weather was really a significant problem for them there. So it wasn't only the tax credits.
Through the chair, I think out of that process, yes, there was a lot of weather problems with Kodiak, and there was also a volcano that was erupting.
Yes, and so they actually were weathered out because
they were weathered out. Those are issues that a lot of these film crews have to face when they come to Alaska. It's just the nature of filming in Alaska.
But there was
an incentive. I met with the vice president of physical production down there, and he said that if he had his druthers, if there would have been an incentive package in place, he would have pushed further than what he did. So.
All right. Follow-up?
Yeah.
The deadliest catch. Now, that is filmed in Alaska. Now, were you saying that it only has two crew members that are Alaskans and that
technical film people, everyone else they bring up from the lower 48. Film production people. They hire boats. They spend their money in Dutch Harbor. They do spend money, as we pointed out. But the technical people they bring up from the States.
And follow up. So if we had this credit, would it? Do we have those technical people here that could have been doing it if we'd had the credit? I mean, because this is basically an Alaskan show.
Through the chair, it certainly is an Alaskan show. And you see the benefit that we're getting just out of this small show. And this bill really targets the bigger economic value. And with Deadliest Catch, it's a good show visually for Alaska, and we've benefited in other industries as well. I think if we can look at that and take that model and transfer it to some of these larger projects to get more visibility. I've always believed that as long as you keep the cameras clicking, you're going to be able to promote Alaska even more.
I guess my concern here was not with the concept of the bill, which, as I say, I support, but whether simply because we had a tax credit here, we would end up with the deadliest catch, which was an example that you use, having more Alaskan film production people. I mean, I'm just not necessarily seeing it.
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, the bill, the way it's set up right now, would offer an incentive for additional local people to be hired.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I've just been told that we weren't on the record when we identified ourselves. I'm Kate Tessa, the pro bono lobbyist for Alaska Film Group, and this is Bob Crockett, who is in film production and also the vice president of the Alaska Film Group.
Yeah, I thought we were back on the record, but sorry about that.
Sure.
We have two amendments that I'm going to bring Senator Ellis back up. We have two amendments, and I'm going to have both the sponsors of the amendments introduce them, and then we'll run the amendments through before we take public testimony so that people will have a chance to comment both on the bill and the bill as it may be amended. I believe that both the amendments are friendly in nature, if I'm not mistaken.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
you care to offer the first amendment?
I'd like to offer amendment number one.
We'll take a brief at ease while it gets passed. Representative Newman, do you care to describe what the amendment does?
Mr. Chair, amendment number one refers to line 21, page 4, following the word accountant, and inserts the word selected by the film office. And the reason for this amendment was because these expenditures would be verified by an independent certified public accountant, I thought it would add more credibility to that if that independent accounting firm was selected by the film office as opposed to the producers of the film. And this is why I offered that, the amendment number one.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's an excellent refinement and improvement in the bill. I support it 100%.
Representative Gatto?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Would you prefer the word approved over the word selected? In other words, you have to do the selecting yourself, or you can simply select and approve yourself, or just approve someone else's.
Chairman, it's not a major concern for me. I guess I'd like to consult the drafter and consult the film group, but I think the intent, what the direction Representative Newman is trying to go is very positive, but the exact phraseology or language, I could live with it either way, obviously. Live with the judgment of the committee.
Representative Newman, followed by Representative Gardner.
First, Mr. Chair, I would certainly like to make sure we move amendment number one when we get there.
Is there any opposition to moving amendment number one?
For discussion.
Representative Gatto?
I'll just offer an amendment to the amendment, substituting selected. I'm sorry, eliminating the word selected and substituting the word approved.
It would appear to me that that would be limiting it more than the original verbiage.
I do too.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gardner?
It seems to me that if you say that they're to be approved by the film office, that doesn't preclude them also selecting it.
Yeah.
True.
So I don't see it as limiting. I see it as expanding. They can be selected by anybody as long as they approve it, or they can select and approve it themselves.
That's how I saw it.
Pardon me?
That's how I saw it, too.
Representative Ledoux?
Well, I'm actually not sure that that would be correct. Because I think if you're just saying approved, that there would be some idea about it that you've got to have a reason for not approving something. You can't be just totally and completely arbitrary about it. Whereas if the selection is yours, then you have total discretion, for what it's worth.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, following along Representative Ledoux's comments, if the film office selects the accounting firm instead of just approving it, that means that the film industry could select it. Anybody could select it. I would like if the state's going to be on the hook for the tax credits, this film office falls under the direction of the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, that they should be the ones who select it and not just approve it.
Mr. Chairman, just procedurally, is the amendment to the amendment before us? Is there an objection? What are we?
I believe it's.
What are we doing procedurally, please?
Amendment to the amendment.
We have the amendment to the amendment before us.
Is that right?
How about a roll call? Let's solve that.
Representative Newman?
No.
Representative Gatto?
Yes.
Representative Ledoux?
No.
Representative Ramirez?
No.
Representative Book?
No.
Representative Gardner?
Yes.
Chairman Olson?
No.
Two yeas, five nays.
So before us, we have the original amendment, amendment number one.
Okay.
Is there any objection to amendment number one? Seeing that, amendment number one will pass. We also have amendment number two, which is brief at ease.
Before I offer amendment number two, I just want to state for the record that I have a modest conflict of interest because we have hosted Sean Penn and other production groups, and we have participated in exactly the economic cycle that has been described by the bill sponsor and those folks that have come up and offered testimony. I just want to be on the record for having said that. I'd like to offer amendment number two.
Object.
Mr. Chairman, the Senator Ellis talked about trying to capture the expanding industry and that 5 years from now it may have a different configuration than it does now. And I was, Senator, I was struck by one of the slides that we saw up here that showed the difference in the dollar volume between a high production and a medium grade production and a low budget production. And although we would love through your bill to capture all of them, ideally the most money to land here would be a lot of the DVD boxes that we recognized with Kevin Costner, Al Pacino, Sandra Bullock, and those stars all, you know, mega money. And I wouldn't want us to go through all the steps as you described and then find that a significant amount of that credit was excluded because we weren't capturing the payroll cost from the largest stars. And I thought maybe you could address that, or we could ask the industry people to come up and to help address that, because I love the idea. It's we as you know, Senator, the ATIA and going round and round about the dedicated funds to the tourism industry each year. When we host travel agents, the most valuable words that a travel agent can ever utter are, "I've been there." And a lot of these movie and television productions that you're talking about, they echo that. People see men in trees and they're like, "I'm going there," and even though it's shot in the wrong place, and it's so valuable. So I'm so excited about us moving forward on this piece of legislation. But I thought that either you could address that, or maybe we could get the gentleman from the Alaska Film Institute up to
hopefully address both. That.
Okay, yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, to Representative Ramirez, I would just note that the capitation on tax incentive for high-wage talent in the productions was not part of my original bill. That was something that came in a committee substitute adopted by the Senate Finance Committee, and folks there were more comfortable with a capitation or a limitation on the incentive that went for that portion of the production. I agree with Representative Ramirez that without this limitation, we're more competitive for the highest dollar productions in the state. So it's a trade-off of things and finding a comfort level that this legislature can achieve. So I understand this wasn't originally part of my bill. Other folks imposed it upon me, and I will live with the will of the committee. I would expect that we will be dealing with this maybe at a conference committee, maybe with the Senate concurring in the House changes. Who knows how this will play out? But
maybe we'll finance.
Maybe who knows? But we'll follow it through, and I know the private sector folks would like to make a comment on this specific point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Question? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not quite sure who to ask on this one, either the maker of the amendment or these folks. Say, what I'm trying to understand here is in compensation wages of excess of $2 million to be paid. So could the state be on the hook for 30% of their wages? Because I'm assuming that some of these higher paid stars, the Sean Penns of the world or whoever they may be, or, you know, so the state's on the hook for 30% of their salary, including any income that they may earn 20 years from now if this film still comes up on, or is it just in the production cost? How does that all work?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Newman, you're partially correct. It would be on the portion of the salary that's paid while the talent is in Alaska. That's part of why we have the whole process with the CPA, so that this is very closely observed, and the portion of the part of the film that they are in Alaska, not unlike we were talking about Into the Wild earlier, That film took place in many other locations. It was a $30 million film, but a few million dollars of that took place in Alaska. So it would be the portion taking place in Alaska, and it would be portion of that time by that talent spent in Alaska. So it would be 30% of whatever time it is they spend in Alaska.
So if a person got paid $1 million or $10 million for doing a film, and you know more about this than I do, and they were, and they spent 10 days making this film that they were on set, but only two of those days were in Alaska, they'd get paid for those 2 days or that percentage of the amount of time that they spent total in Alaska? Is that
Through the chair, that's correct. It's whatever they, whatever time they spend in Alaska is what they would be compensated for through the transferable tax credit. And there would be no future opportunity for them. It's only when the production is being produced in Alaska.
And then this says that if they receive wages in excess of $2 million, that's going to be clear enough. So if they made $4 million was their percentage, they can still only get 30% of the $2 million or $600,000 on that?
Through the chair, that's what I understand as well through the, with the bill, is that there would be a cap of $2 million.
They get $600,000 tax credit.
That's
because
correct.
That guy was here for...
And I might also add that when you're putting a cap on a $2 million wage for someone like Sandra Bullock or something like that, we may not see Sandra Bullock come to the state.
Representative Ramirez, followed by Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was my question. I was trying to finish. Is the slide that was most interesting to me, because it seems to go directly to Senator Ellis's bill, is high-end productions, mid-scale productions, and low-end productions. And as attractive as the deadliest catch is, that was only a $3.7 million total production, whereas Men in Trees, which is just a network television program, was $20 million. So presumably a Kevin Costner film is $100 million. And we would want to attract, I believe, Senator, that the point behind your bill is to attract all three types. I mean, and those would recognize all three sizes of productions. And I further would understand that if Kevin Costner got $20 million for the film, and it costs and it took 100 days to shoot the film, and his wage is $200,000 per day, and if they shot in Alaska for 20 days, then there would be a $4 million wage credit if we were to remove the cap. And it seems that if a large part of this bill, in spite of the concerns of the bill sponsor, if a large part of this bill is designed to try and capture the coming trends of the next 5 to 10 years. These movie stars keep making more and more and more money, and we would want the biggest stars to come here who would bring the largest production sets and the most amount of people and create the most economic trade in their wake. So that's why I was offering the amendment. Am I on the right track here?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ramirez, I would say that after the legislation came out of Senate Finance and passed the Senate, people in the industry and people working on this have had a chance to review it, and the feeling was that would be a large problem with the legislation. Other states that are in competitive dealings with the films right now do not have these caps. And you're right, $2 million is a very, very small cap considering the kind of films that we are trying to attract in Alaska. And I think, having worked with the senator on this, I think the feeling is that we're trying to create new jobs and a new industry here in Alaska. So why be more restrictive? I think the feeling is to be open to see what can happen. There has to be a report every year to the legislature, so that if there's a decision that something is costing too much, it can be taken care of, and there's also a 5-year sunset on this. So, I mean, we can only hope that we're going to have that problem, that there's going to be too many people coming to Alaska.
Mr. Chair, I'll remove my objection.
Mr. Chair. Representative Newman.
It's just on that point, because the fiscal number 3 has to do with the committee substitute for Senate bill, which is 230 finance, which we're looking at. And when we look at the paragraph just where it says revenues, it says Alaska credit will therefore be one of the most generous in the nation in terms of percent of qualified production expenditures. So if we're already one of the most, well, you're shaking your head, Kate.
I'm sorry, no, I'll wait for you, for representative.
But in the analysis on the fiscal note, it says Alaska's credit will therefore be one of the most generous in the nation in terms of the percent of qualified production expenditures. Earlier we heard it was kind of in the middle, but this says that we're actually at the top end, where Connecticut is 30% of the credit on 50,000, and Alaska is pretty much the same there. But they don't give the 2% credit for rural expenditures, or is it 2% for off-season production? So I guess we're...
Would you like me to respond to that, Representative?
Well,
the amendment's passed.
Thank you.
Because I removed my objection.
Do I get a chance to object then? That's fine.
I was just going to say, Representative, there's someone online that can address this, because we do have an expert that's online who's worked with all the states, so she can address
that. That's where we're going next. Yes. Public testimony. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ledoux.
I have a question that I want to ask the bill sponsor.
Senator Ellis?
I'll try.
Going back to the tax code, you told me that the production companies generally set up LLCs, and are the LLCs not subject to state income taxes?
That's correct. That was an easy one. Thank you.
Before you leave, could I follow up on that?
Sure.
Cruise ships, LLCs, who is not an LLC?
Everybody that does business here forms an LLC, practically.
And we collect corporate income tax.
No.
No. It's a different kind of tax.
Mr. Chairman, I have a S-Corp and an LLC, and neither of those entities have to pay taxes to the state of Alaska. C-Corp has to pay taxes to the state of Alaska, and a C-Corp enjoy certain benefits through the federal tax code. But both of the legal entities that I work under don't do that, although I pay a fee to the state of Alaska to organize myself as such. Jerry, doing good.
And the cruise ships are incorporated elsewhere, cruise ship companies.
Representative Ledoux.
Maybe I'm getting beyond this bill, then. Why would anybody not be an LLC in this state?
You are getting beyond the bill, and we do have people signed up to testify. Maya Falganek, are you with us, Maya?
Certain benefits on federal tax code make you
LLC. Yes, hello, I'm here.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Yes, hello. My name is Maya Falganek, and I am an associate professor with the University of Alaska Fairbanks.
Please continue.
Well, I want to thank Sponsor Ellis and Chair Olson and the members of the House Labor and Commerce Committee for hearing my testimony today regarding Senate Bill 230. As I stated, I'm an assistant professor of film studies and digital media here at the University of Alaska, and I'm the chair of the Digital Cinema Curriculum Committee. I have a wonderful opportunity to help guide this next generation of filmmakers, directors, screen actors, producers, and creative animators towards their visions and the future career that they want in the entertainment industry. Most of my students are very talented and are Alaskans, and they would prefer to live and work in Alaska while pursuing their chosen career. I myself am a native New Mexican, and I have seen firsthand how the film industry has impacted my hometown, the rural communities, and the local economy of New Mexico in the short 5 years that I've left and seen the film industry start up in New Mexico. I just want to kind of remind people how much interest there is in making film in Alaska. In just the past 2 weeks, I've been personally contacted by the United Nations, looking for a contract to film in rural Alaska, by the Discovery Channel, looking to shoot a series called Alaska Week all over the state, by opportunities to film locally with an international crew at the World Ice Art Championships, and I've been asked to co-produce a feature film, which would feature the World Eskimo Indian Olympics in a fictitious comedy. I've received all of these phone calls because my name is listed on the Alaska Film Office website. People look for the film office first to make contact with our local state professionals prior to investing time dollars and energy in a film production here. On average, these are small productions. They're budgeted between $500,000 and $1 million each. This is small numbers, but, you know, considering the fiscal note is going to start the film office at half that budget cost, it would be paid back in just a single film production alone in the state. This film incentive program will be the key to unlock larger productions with the multi-million-dollar budgets that we're all looking for. You know, Alaska's beauty has been an export commodity since the very first drawings and images left out of this state. It's a commodity that we protect, cherish, and we want to share with the world. The beauty and unique features of Alaska sells itself. We don't have to beg our industry for the film industry to come here like other states do. We just have to facilitate the growth of the industry and the training of locals for professional development, and then give the support to the film office and the incentive program. As a member of the University of Alaska Fairbanks, there is a committed group of faculty and staff and students here ready to step up and bring the training opportunities to our students so that these jobs are being filled by Alaskans locally. So, again, thank you all for your hard work on this bill, and we look forward to its passage.
Thank you very much. Gordon Carlson, are you with us?
Muted.
I'd like to thank the chair and the rest of the committee for hearing.
Unmuted.
Start out by introducing ourselves. Name is Gordon and Rachel Carlson. We reside in Cantwell, Alaska. We own a small construction company called CLI Construction, located in the Denali Borough. We encourage you to vote for the passage of Senate Bill 230, the incentive to bring the film industry to Alaska. Many movies are made outside of Alaska whose location should be in Alaska. In those locations, they encourage the film industry by incentives and tax breaks. We need to encourage the film industry to come to Alaska. This would boost our economy, put people to work, and give the people the visual education of what Alaska really looks like. Alaska tourism industry would benefit greatly from this. Our experience in the film, Into the Wild, bought millions of dollars, probably $3 to $4 million in ground spend to our borough, let alone our little community of Cantwell. It affected our small construction company, businesses, local restaurants, hotels, motels, carpenters, laborers, let alone what it did for the car rental companies in Anchorage and Fairbanks. The timing of this movie was a really shot in the arm because of when they chose to start filming in April, a real boost to the start of the construction and tourism season. Having movies filmed in Alaska will encourage more people to come visit our state to see where some of these movies are filmed at. We look to our representatives and senators to make the best decision for Alaska, and we feel the passage of Senate Bill 230 would be an asset to our state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? We'll move on, and I'm going to apologize in advance for butchering your name, but Dama Castley, am I close?
Chasel.
No, it's well, sort of. It's Dama Chasel.
Oh, I was half close.
Okay, well, that's half. First of all, I'm Dama Chasel. I'm a production executive here in Los Angeles, and I've been an advisor on a number of film legislations, and I want to thank Senator Ellis and everyone today for being so good to consider SB 230 and the positive effects I've personally seen happen when the business of film lands in the States. It's no secret to you in Alaska. You've been fighting runaway production. Most of your shows that could have been filmed in Alaska have been filmed in Canada, and it's time to end that. My excitement about everything today and a couple points I'll try to clarify really are what happens when the business of film, the industry lands in a state, and it really is a jobs incubator. It would be wonderful for the state to have the opportunity that I think you're well deserving of, and not just have The Guardian doing a second unit in Alaska, which started in April, but in fact the whole movie, which could have been there, except that the incentives weren't available and Disney wasn't able to budget the show on time for the amount of money they had to make it. Instead, it was made in Shreveport. A couple byproducts from making a film, a large film like this, nearly $100 million budget, are the leave-behinds. Shreveport, Louisiana, got the benefit of a leave-behind wave tank. And after several films, Mr. Costner bought a home in Shreveport, Louisiana. So I really echo the sentiment of the gentleman who said, I've been there. even translating it to I'll stay there. And it's exciting to have stars around town. The hustle and bustle picks up tourism. We've seen it happen in many, many states. It really becomes Destination Alaska. Who doesn't want to sit on the bench where Forrest Gump sat there with a box of chocolates? Why couldn't that bench be in Sitka? And why couldn't it be a romantic comedy with the charming Sandra Bullock? Right now, it's because Massachusetts offers a very strong incentive with no caps on it. So I do urge everyone to consider losing the talent caps, at least for a while, until you can get a sustainable industry in Alaska. Another point that's really exciting is the local businesses that benefit. It is really the lumber yards, the hotels, the apartments, the casting agency, equipment rentals, banks, and real estate offices that just fill up when a show comes to town. Cast and crew tend to spend their money where they make it, and if they're filming in Alaska, they take their salary and their per diems, and they spend it where they work. So we've seen success stories in small towns like Shreveport becoming multi-million dollar leaders for the state. Louisiana is now number three in film production behind California and New York, and right in front of number four is New Mexico. I think that Alaska really has a chance to be part of this, sort of the second gold rush, and I think that we can offer programs with our business, the industry of film, in schools and trainings for many of your young people. We could have digital parks there to provide year-round training for Alaskans to let them stay in Alaska and not migrate to the 48, lower 48. And I really think showcasing the business allows a year-round opportunity for Alaska. My sense is that you will have an opportunity not just by one or two small non-speaking reality shows, but the real Men in Trees, or more exciting shows that could come there, like the project that the Coen brothers would really love to be able to make in Alaska, if it's economically prudent for the studios, who are the decision makers ultimately in where a show will go. And I do want to make a couple comments that I heard today, just to clarify a few things, and that is states don't want to get involved in profit or loss sharing with movies, because for the same profitable movie, there's dozens that are loss leaders. You don't want to share in their losses. It's really just an important point to think about, and I've decided, listening to everyone, that maybe we could film part of the one episode of the World's Toughest Jobs right here on the floor, because this isn't easy to decide what to do with everyone's information and the difficulty of processing all this. But my sense is also to share with you that talent, the expensive male and female leads, don't earn any of these tax credits themselves. It's the production company that would earn those tax credits, and of course, its choice would be to sell them with a bona fide business tax broker, and there are many of these because other states have tax credit programs in addition to film. They often have historic building housing credits, energy credits, and those kinds of brokers tend to help introduce the film companies to corporate buyers that are state-based. So that's another important distinction, which is talent don't get these credits. The production company does. It takes the gamble, the choice to film in the location. And I will end it on this note from a favorite movie of mine, Field of Dreams, a little change. If you build it, they will come. My sense is if you build this business in Alaska, they will stay. And I want to thank all of you in support of SB 230.
Thank you very much. Pam Foreman, Kodiak. Are you with us, Pam?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Pam Foreman from Kodiak. I'm here to speak in favor of Senate Bill 230, developing a film incentive program for Alaska. This bill will allow Alaska an opportunity to participate in the multi-million dollar film industry. Currently, the state's unable ability to compete in this economic field is severely hampered by our lack of such a program, as you've heard today. I know this from experience. From 1998 to August 2007, I served as the director of the Kodiak Island Convention and Visitors Bureau. With the lack of a state film office, Alaska's CVBs often step in to act as a community's film office. Such was the case in 2003 when I began working with John Markell, who's a location scout out of Girdwood. John was scouting for Disney for a film called The Guardian at the time, and Kodiak was being considered as a location. It made sense. The film was about a rescue swimmer stationed at a Coast Guard base in Kodiak. Unfortunately, as you've heard over and over again today, the majority of this film was shot in Shreveport, Louisiana, and Elizabeth City, North Carolina. One has to wonder how much of the revenue that Louisiana gained over the next 2 or 3 years could have been coming to Alaska. And to answer Representative Ledoux's questions, by the time we got to the point where the weather was turning around the first unit of filming, we had already lost the majority of the film to Shreveport, Louisiana. We lost that through the negotiations and the lack of a tax incentive program. So we were already down to the bare bones, and we finally ended up with just some scenic shots done here, which we were very grateful to get. But basically, Alaska and Kodiak could not compete with the tax incentives offered by Louisiana. As you've heard today, this is certainly not the only opportunity Alaska has missed in recent years. And I believe, as a state, we cannot afford to continue stacking up missed opportunities and bypassing the positive financial impacts and jobs the film industry would bring. I urge you to support the current version of SB 230 and move it forward. Thank you for your time today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Is there anybody else online that would care to testify? Hearing none, we'll bring it into the room, and we have one person signed up, Bryce Haberger. Please join us. Welcome.
Thank you.
And please state your name and affiliation okay. for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's good to be here. For the record, my name is Bryce Haberger. I'm a resident of Alaska my whole life, born and raised here. I'm 23 years old. And I spent the last 5 years of my life going to school in Chicago. The reason for going to school out there was film studies. I graduated this December with a degree in film studies. I know how to shoot, I know how to edit, I know how to do just about anything you can name on a production. Earlier, Ledoux, through the chair, you said, is there Alaskans who are qualified to do these jobs? I stand before you and testify that I am one. And I would, as I look down the road, you know, my future in the film industry, I see that there are Alaskans who can do that. They have to do it up north, though. You know, they have to do it in the Anchorage area. And I would hope that I could do it right here in Juneau, you know, southeast Alaska, with a film like the Yiddish Policeman's Union. And it's through something like the Tax Incentive Program through SB 230 that would create that sort of incentive, that would create those jobs for someone like myself. That's all I have to say.
Any questions? For example,
through the chair. Was there any opportunity to do any studies here in state instead of you going to Chicago? Was there any programs that were offered here, or did you get your start here, or could you give us a little bit of history about that?
Yes, absolutely. Through the chair, there's the University of Fairbanks offers a it's not a film program, it's a digital studies kind of it's a small scale program as opposed to what I wanted. And living in Chicago and going to school in Chicago, so I was exposed to the film productions that were going on there. I was exposed to a school that we had access to studio equipment, 35 millimeter Panavision cameras, very nice cameras. I was able to shoot on sets that were very professionally run, and I needed that personally for my education.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank
Representative
you.
Ramers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In response to Representative Book, I understand that Commissioner Click Bishop is initiated a jobs program for training in the movie industry and allocated money from the Department of Labor, or is contemplating that? Not really, Mr. Chairman. Not really. He is? Not really. It's just jobs are the thing of the year. You know. Anyway, it's wonderful. I'm familiar with KUAC and our whole public television program up at UAF. And I think it is just outstanding, the opportunity to get young people involved in showing the state of Alaska. There's no more powerful medium than the electronic medium of television. There's just nothing greater, better, that tells more about the state of Alaska and shows the majesty of the state, and look at all the locations that we've just discussed today. Kodiak, Fairbanks, Cantwell, Anchorage, the lost opportunities that Shreveport offers. I mean, this is an opportunity to keep our best and brightest rather than to have them migrate to Hollywood. And I've got a couple of people in Fairbanks that have left. Ben Grossman, who did the day after the big, destruction in New York City deal. He was working in Fairbanks and has moved. Chris Ledoux, Representative Ledoux's nephew, has migrated out there. Michael Roderick, who worked under Ben Grossman, has migrated from Fairbanks and was doing the special effects for that television show Charmed. So I would suggest that Mr. Haberger is representative of a whole group of young Alaskans that, if there was work here, would be more inclined to participate here or return to their home here for the opportunity to do work. Am I barking up the right tree, Mr. Haberger?
Yes. Absolutely, through the chair, yes.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
Is there anybody in the room that would care to testify that hasn't had a chance yet? Seeing none, we'll close the public testimony and bring it back to the committee. Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair, I had a question for the sponsor of the bill.
Senator Ellis.
Senator Ellis.
Can you bring a copy of the bill back?
I think you can handle this one.
Oh, okay.
Who pays for the independent audit? The state of Alaska through the Department of Commerce, the revenue, or does the film industry?
No, it'd be the film industry.
Thank you.
Representative Gatto.
Senator, I'm just trying to figure out a way to game this. Let's say I'm just an independent person, and I like to travel and produce documentaries wherever I go. And I look at this, and I'll go, $100,000 over 2 years. Could I spend $50,000 on a camera, $50,000 on other expenses, and then take a 30 plus 10 plus 2 plus 2 credit?
No, I think we would catch you on that one.
How do you catch me, though? What did I do
wrong?
You
have a site for that.
I do. It's on page three here, under eligibility. There's two limitations. Producer has $100,000 or more in qualified expenditures, and that the production is approved by the film office. And the film office would have latitude to say that is not the kind of production we need to be incentivizing or would like to be giving credits to.
Okay.
We get to make the call.
I see. I might sue you, but what the heck?
It's a free country. We might make a movie out of that.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, it just keeps coming up in my mind, and so I guess I'm not clear on it. But again, and you say an advertised infomercial, and then we had explained by your staff that an infomercial is, Ginzu knives. But we don't address commercials in here in the eligibility, and unless I missed something, and I know that, and I bet Representative Ramos could speak to this on how much it costs to not produce films, or commercials, but even buy airtime and that type of thing, where you have a movie that movies also buy airtime. Come watch this movie, and it's going to be out on such and such date. And, which of those costs are there? But that's a tremendous amount of money, I would think. And we're talking about 24-month period, so that's 2 years, and that's $100,000. I would be safe, probably, if I... And I'm just going to take a guess, but I would say that Representative Ramos's company spends $100,000 quite easily in 2 years on types of commercials. I don't know. I think their television time is very expensive, but does that like include the purchase of television time, a commercial for advertisement in movies, or because that would be part of the production fee or production cost, wouldn't it? Or
production cost. No. Through the chair, Representative Newman, on page six, the list of qualified expenditures excludes the post-production expenditures for marketing and distribution. That's element number two, which would be, as you mentioned, the cost for putting a TV show on the air. So those would not be included as a...
Although I think probably the actors in Representative Ramos' commercials work for less than $2 million a year, but some of the, maybe not, I don't know.
He has his own cap.
I haven't looked at his qualified expenditures yet.
He pays them in cookies.
Representative Rambis.
Mr. Chairman, first of all, we produce our commercials for about $500 to $800 each. We're a pretty low-budget outfit. We're pretty low-budget. But if I could just stay focused on this bill, because I just am so in love with it, and I have a good example to offer to the committee. The movie Ice Age, the fantastic ice sculptures in Fairbanks. And Murkowski started it, Governor Murkowski started it. Governor Palin has continued trying to bring up different dignitaries, consul generals, ambassadors, some high-level people to encourage international trade for the state of Alaska. And a couple of years ago, Ice Age, as the movie premiered, we had a couple of the stars from Ice Age in Fairbanks, and it was the opportunity to showcase winter tourism in the interior of Alaska while promoting a bona fide high-budget film. Now, I don't think that Alaska participated because it was an animated film, but nevertheless, I think that this is a wisp, a hint of what Senator Ellis is saying that we could accomplish with this. Not only is it the boots on the ground money that gets spent, but it's the state of Alaska, the exposure that we get. I mean, Ice Age was gigantic in its exposure, and we're trying to figure out how to leverage ATIA dollars on some fancy formula of 70-30 or 30-70 or whatever it is, and the myriad of arguments that we have around that, and we have this opportunity to export Alaska to the masses, and it's not even just in the U.S. anymore. It's around the world because of the global nature of these films. I mean, I just think that anything that we do to get people here is great for the state, great for people like Mr. Haberger that testified before us. I don't see a negative on the table. And I just applaud the bill sponsor and am so pleased that we've given a thorough vetting to this piece of legislation for 2 hours.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rambis and I have found something that we can work together on and agree on, and I consider it a breakthrough. We may make a movie about it.
The breakthrough.
What are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chair, if it's time, I would like to move, what is it, House Bill number 230, it's version N.A. I'm sorry, Senate Bill 230, version N.A, with individual recommendations as amended and with attached fiscal notes.
Forthcoming and whatever.
Seeing no opposition, it'll move on to finance with at least two new cross-sponsors.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the hearing and the committee's good work on the bill.
Thank you very much.